Let's begin. So we're describing Pesach. So far, we worked out the idea of Mitzrayim. We spoke about how the Jewish people were told they're going to be enslaved in a strange land, which ended up being Mitzrayim. And they were slaves. Avadim Hayinu was physical slavery. What we're going to look at today is something which isn't so apparent by looking at the Pesukim, but if we look at certain words inside that the Torah uses, and certain, we're going to look at obviously the Talmudic sources and the Rishonim and Acharonim, are going to discuss the idea of it wasn't just a physical servitude, but more than that, and much more dangerous than that, was a spiritual servitude as well. So we were slaves in a physical way, but we were also slaves in a spiritual way. Let's have a look first of all at Rav Dessler, who talks about the idea of freedom. Now remember, so freedom is going to represent physical as well as spiritual freedom. And he quotes the expression describing Pesach, because Pesach is referred to as Pesach, which we spoke about already, because Hashem Pasach jumped over the homes of the Jewish people to kill the Egyptian firstborn in the first plague. Hashem Pasach, says Rashi Diluk, he jumped over the homes. So we were physically saved. But as well as that, we were spiritually saved. And that is hinted to in the expression for the time of year that Pesach comes. And that is mentioned in the Torah. And that is called Zman Cheruseinu, or Zman Cheruteinu. Okay? So those are the words from the Torah that describe Pesach. What's interesting is that those words don't describe the holiday, they describe the time. Let's have a look at those two words. Let's dig inside them a little bit and try to work out exactly what is going on. So those are key words which we'll be describing today. And we're going to use those words, Mr. Hashem, to take us into the idea of chametz and matzah, which are going to reflect these ideas. Okay, are we all together so far? Very, very good. So Zman Cheruseinu means the time of our freedom. The time of our freedom. That doesn't just mean the day that the doors opened to get us out of Egypt. It happens to coincide with that time, but more than just being the time of our freedom, in the Jewish year 2448, on the 15th of Nisan, it's also going to be a perpetual time. Let's break down these words just a little bit. First of all, Zman. Zman is related to another Hebrew word. Does anyone know what other Hebrew word Zman is related to? Zimun. Very, very good. Zimun. As my father always says, Zimun and the stars. Okay, never mind. So Zman we refer to as time. Yeah. But it's related to another word, which is Zimun, which is the same Shoresh. What does the word Zimun mean? Now, that's what you say, we call together, right? Make a Zimun is to call together. But what are you actually calling people together to do? Before benching, for example, make a Zimun is to prepare. We prepare people to come together to pray. So Zimun actually means to prepare. So Zman Cheruseinu means the time of our freedom, but it also is going to mean that we have a certain time that is prepared for freedom. Okay? This is a very important idea. And Rav Dessler, who I brought down over here, makes a whole essay based upon this concept. And let's just try to, I brought down a small piece, but let's just try to understand it because it's going to really change the way we look at Pesach. So Pesach isn't just an event. It is an event, which is why it's referred to as Pesach. But Pesach refers to the event that happened. But we relate to it on a different level, which is also a Zman, a time. A time of what? Of freedom. How can a time represent an idea? This is a very Jewish idea, concept. And the answer is that certain times in the Jewish year, we mentioned this last semester, those who were there with us, but now we're going to relate to Pesach. Certain times bring with them certain energies. Okay? The Hebrew word for a year is a shana. the word shana also means to, right? To, right? To change is very, very good, but also to repeat. Repeat, right? Lechem Mishnah, right, is a double loaf of bread, right, we use on Shabbat. So Mishnah, right, the Mishnah is the repetition. Mishnah Torah is the fifth book of the Chumash. Deuteronomy, duet, is a doubling up, because it repeats a lot of the core ideas from the five books of, from the first four books, which the Jewish people needed to get into Eretz Yisrael. So the word Mishnah, Shana, all reflect the same idea, to repeat, as in duet, is a doubling up. Okay. So why would the word for a year mean to repeat? I told you there's a lot of Hebrew today, didn't I? This is not just to torture you, right? Right? Hebrew, we said, Lashon Kodesh reveals the essence of what something is. Right? Hebrew represents the essence and reveals to us a lot more than an English word can ever do. Okay? So why is the same word for year also to repeat? Because the year repeats itself, says Rav Dessler. And it follows a spiral pattern, like so. Okay? Or if you want a physical representation, a 3D representation, a multi-level parking lot that goes around and around and round and round. Okay? It's not a circle, because then you would see yourself from the previous year, which would be extremely challenging and freaky. And it's not a line, which is how the secular Christian Greek world sees time, as a line of events. Okay? Or timeline, as it's referred to. Because in a timeline, there is no relationship between any of the points. Can you see that? Something happened over here, and then something happened over here. These are two completely different realities. They have no connection to each other. We may refer to this by this name, but there is actually no connection between those points. In other words, it's not a line, it's a series of many, 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 many dots that are pulled together, which look like a line, but there's no relationship between this date and this date. We may use a name to relate them, but there is no relationship. Which is why the dates that are chosen for secular holidays, like Thanksgiving, for example, have no relationship to the original date something occurred in. We can choose any date, and they do choose any date. Can you see that? This is very different to the Jewish model, which is that the year repeats itself. So we follow a 365-day cycle, which then starts again and moves in circles. There's a whole discussion on why we're so obsessed with circles, but you're not in a circle because then you end up in the place that you started, which you can't because you're 1 year further on. So this is year zero. This is year one, two, right? And it goes right through. So I'm in the same place. Can you see that? But I'm a year later. Well, actually, price should go up. That's why we say, B'yamim ahem, bazman hazeh. It's in those days, but this is the zman. The time has been prepared. Are you following this very important idea? If you don't understand what I'm saying, I'll repeat it. Absolutely. The commentators say that zman is a time within reality that is prepared through time. So time is something. For us, zman, time, is something. It's not nothing. Right? Which is why wasting time is a terrible thing, because you're wasting something. So the entire year has certain stations that we travel through the year, and you travel, and you have certain stops that you come to, and you pick up certain things at each stop. This is actually the analogy given by Rav Dessler, this Jewish thinker who goes very deeply into this beautiful idea. So as you travel through the year, you get to a different stop, and you stop, and you stop, and you pick up certain things along the way. There is one Sukkot. You pick up a Muna and Simcha, actually. And then you stop at Purim. Then you stop at Yom Kippur, where you get Kapara, you get forgiveness. Now, you can have that any time, but there are certain stations that are set up along the way which allow you to pick those things up a little bit easier.
So you travel through time, and then the year starts again. And it's always been this way from the beginning of creation. So one of the stops along the way is a time called Cheruseinu, which is freedom. The date of that is the 15th of Nisan. That is freedom time, which explains a very, very incredible concept, which Rashi quotes himself on Chumash, that when the Malachim came to visit Avraham Avinu, he gave them Ugot. This is a side point, but it's fascinating. I love this. He gave them Ugot. What are Ugot? So in modern Hebrew, it's cakes. But we see that word appear again when the Jewish people leave Mitzrayim. What did we leave Mitzrayim with? Matzah. So Ugot is actually a code word for matzah. And Rashi over there, actually a little bit later, when he discusses Lot, says that that Avraham Avinu was visited on Pesach, which makes sense because Yitzchak was born a year afterwards. Okay? So it was Pesach time. How could it be Pesach? The Jewish people hadn't even gone into Mitzrayim. You hear the question? How can Avraham Avinu have eaten matzah? Because he gave the matzah to the guests. How could Avraham Avinu, as Rashi says, have celebrated Pesach when the Jewish people hadn't even entered inside Mitzrayim, let alone left Mitzrayim? Can you hear the question? I'll say it again. We know in Chumash, there's a hint, there's a remez. It's not pshat, but it's merumaz, it's hinted that when the Melachim came to visit Avraham Avinu, he gave them matzah, and Rashi says it was Pesach time. It was Pesach. How could it be Pesach? Pesach is a celebration of the redemption of the Jewish people from Egypt. How can it be that the Jewish people, who weren't even the Jewish people yet, and Avraham Avinu, could celebrate Pesach? So it's backwards in history. So the answer is... Exactly. Very, very good. So that means somewhere in the time flow sequence, there is a time in the fabric of time called freedom. It's always been there. Where does it appear? On the 15th of Nisan. Now, before the Jewish people, there were individuals who were very, very great. Among them, Avraham Avinu. Avraham Avinu somehow, now we don't know how, maybe the people greater than me who do, but we don't know how, was able to tap into the energy and knew that this was the time. Now, the results of this are going to be unbelievable. Because if what I'm saying is true, and it is, because it's not my idea, the Jewish people did not leave Egypt, and that's why we celebrate Pesach. In other words, we don't celebrate Pesach because the Jewish people left Egypt. It's the other way around. The Jewish people left Egypt because it was Pesach. I'll say that again. We don't celebrate Pesach because the Jewish people left Egypt. The Jewish people left Mitzrayim, Egypt, because it was Pesach. What do you mean because it was Pesach? Because it was Zman Cheruseinu, it was the time of freedom. Now, they could have left any time, but they had to leave that time. Because that was the time when the doors, the spiritual doors, whatever it means, were open. Avraham Avinu tapped into it. That means HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a thing called time, and within time, he created something called freedom. So when you felt trapped, you get to, oh, I feel freedom. Happens to be, we're going to see that the food that is related to freedom is matzah. There is no coincidence. That we'll see why in a second. Let me just finish the idea, Naomi, then we'll come to questions. I just have to finish the circle in my own head. So the food that is related to freedom, we're going to see, is matzah. Which is why Avraham Avinu gave matzah to his guests. Because that's the... And the food that is related to slavery is chametz, leavened. These aren't coincidental foods that we just happen to eat on these days. We're saying that integral in freedom is matzah, and we'll see why, what matzah represents. And integral in slavery is chametz. There's something about slavery that is chametz day. The two are connected. The foods, the mitzvahs that we do on any given holiday relate and reflect the original activity. The mitzvah itself comes as a... So the matzah is going to represent... We'll see how. We're going to get there. It's going to represent chirus. And Mitzrayim is going to be represented by something called chametz, which is why on Pesach, we're going to have to get rid of the chametz. That is an integral part. Why? It connects to the time. The time itself. The time itself demands of us to remove chametz and to indulge in matzah. The time calls for it. And it has to be that way. Otherwise, why would I stay away from the stuff? I eat chametz the entire year and nothing happens to me. It's something about the time itself. Eating matzah a day after Pesach is a completely irrelevant act. It doesn't do anything except give you stomach problems. Right? It's not going to do something for you. It's specifically that time. That is the time of it. Same thing. You can if you want to. You can eat matzah before. It's irrelevant. And you can eat chametz because the time itself is... What we're saying is Pesach isn't just an event that happened a few thousand years ago. It's a recurring theme that spins around on this spiral every single year at that time. Hence the expression, by Yamim Ahim, as we always say, right? Bazman hazeh. What are Chazal saying with those words? We're saying that those are the days. It happened in the past. These are historical realities. But that's not so much. It is the focus. If I want the best example of freedom, to fully understand what capabilities of freedom we have on that day, Pesach is the paradigm. But the mistake you should not make, Rav Dessel is making over here, is that it isn't just an event, it's a time. Which means that if they went free, we can go free. I mean, that's the punchline. They were slaves. We're still slaves. How do we go free? Pesach gives us that door. Matzah is the way to get out. Okay, we'll do Naomi had a hand up first. Yeah. I can't hear you. You got to speak louder. Very, very good question. Excellent question. Says Naomi, one second. There were many Pesachs before. So the answer is they weren't worthy of it. You have to achieve it. They were not worthy. Actually, they weren't even worthy in 2448 when they did leave Mitzrayim. And just had they stayed, the Haggadah answers your question and says, had they stayed, and we'll look at this verse inside, they would never have got out. We would have completely assimilated. Hashem had to take us out that year. That was our last chance. We went down to the 49th level of Tumah, of spiritual impurity, whatever that means, and Hashem had to himself go in and get us out. He didn't trust angels. He didn't trust the Malachim or the Seraphim. He had to go in himself to get us out. Had we stayed one more year, we would have completely lost everyone. Say what? Very, very nice. Exactly what they say. Either you're so good that you're worthy, or you're so bad. By the way, this is going to reflect the final golus, by the way, the final redemption, I should say, of our people, geula of our people, time of Mashiach. Either we're so... I wouldn't say it's a loophole. I would say it's a hole in a loop, maybe. That's a better... Yeah. Anyways, yeah, Charlie. Yeah.
Okay, and then the other thing is, the thing about, you said we're not celebrating that the Jews left Egypt.
We are celebrating that. We're celebrating the event.
I mean, yeah.
Because without that, we wouldn't be the Jewish people that created the nation. I'm not saying we ignore that.
No, we are.
That is part of it.
The other part of it that we're celebrating.
We're adding another layer on top of it. In other words, if it was just that, I could choose any time. It's irrelevant. If it was just the physical redemption of our people that happened thousands of years ago, that's a nice thing to remember, but after a few thousand years, it's kind of irrelevant.
Right.
I'm saying, hey, fine. I'm very, very grateful to Hashem. It's a wonderful thing. It is that, But I'm saying there's Rav Dessler saying there's another layer, and that is the spiritual redemption, which is represented by the idea of chirus, that we went free, and this is the time, so we're back in that time every year. That's the concept. Well, that was just a favor, right?
Worthy,
yeah.
To leave. So, like, were the people that died in Kershaw, like, were they the people that were so bad that they weren't worthy?
They weren't even part of it. They weren't even part of the whole Geula. Those who died in Chod, that is one opinion. Some say people didn't, the Jews just stayed. They just didn't want to go. There were some Jews, the Midrash says, they just didn't want to leave. They were happy to stay there and said, we don't need part of the Jewish people. We didn't come 210 years, we're Egyptian, and we're not interested. They just didn't want to become part of that reality. And they are not Jewish because they didn't reach Har Sinai. Har Sinai, we're going to see, when we get to Shavuot, is going to be the full creation of the Jewish people. Right, but they were not part of that time, yeah. So, Bayim Ahem, we mentioned our tefillos, just means those were the days that it happened. So that's the historical reality. But it's Bezman Hazeh in this time. What do you mean this time? That means this is the time it happened in. So we relate to both. We relate to the event. That's the Bayim Ahem. But we also relate to Bezman Hazeh. By the way, this also should lead you to a bigger question, which I'm hoping you're asking in your heads, if you're really following with me. And that is, and how do you create a holiday? How do you create a holiday? Purim. Hanukkah. That was created by us. So you're going to have to say, and there are those that do say it, that's also part of the fabric of time, which is why they're always looking for ramazim and hints to those holidays in the Torah, which is HaKadosh Baruch Hu planted somehow in the time, and it took a certain event to happen for us to appreciate, this is the time for it. And they say they had to wait one full year, and a year after Purim, and a year after Hanukkah, they went, this is the time.
For
the holiday. They could feel it. Somehow they had the ability to know that this is the time of it. There's another question, which is not for now, which you're going to do next semester, which is when how does Shabbat fit into all this? That's once a week. So there's a 365-day cycle, but there's also a 7-day cycle we're going to see as well, which is also part of that, which is a circle within a circle. Can you see that? Next semester, Mr. I'm going to do a whole class, not on the laws of Shabbat, but we're going to do all the ideas behind Shabbat, and you can see how Shabbat fits into this. That's its own pattern. There is a 7-day cycle as well, which is purely from the Torah, by the way. You know that. There is no astronomical 7-day cycle. There's a 1-day cycle, 24-hour day, right? There's a 1 month, and there's a 30 days, and there's a 365. 7 is purely from the Torah. The entire world keeps a 7-day week, but that's only from the Torah. Everyone in the whole world, pretty much, I mean, there's a few odd African tribes, although they were not, right? But for the most part, everyone keeps, the Russians and the Chinese and the English and everyone else and even the Americans, they follow a 7-day cycle that's purely from the Torah. What we're saying is it's not. We're saying there's a certain fabric in time that people relate to, there's a 7-day cycle called a week. Nothing happening physically that separates 7 days from another 7 days. You could have a 9-day week. It's purely a Torah reality, but I want to say that just like this, it's following an internal pattern. There's a certain rhythm that the world is created in 7 days, and we follow that as well. It goes 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and back to 1 again. That is a smaller version of a much larger picture of the 365-day Shana as well. But we'll come to that next week, and what that represents, and what Shabbat. Shabbat is a whole different, people put lump them together, but Shabbat is its own topic. You can't talk about it in relation to Jewish holidays. Jewish holidays actually come from Shabbat, not the other way around. You learn our Jewish holidays from Shabbat. That's where the laws come from. I mean the prohibitive laws, not the assets. Is everyone following this? This is deep stuff. Yes?
My question is, can you say that
matzah
is the freedom?
Yeah.
I thought the Jews in Egypt
were very, very, very good. So matzah, excellent question. So we're going to see that the Jewish people were fed a very, very cheap food, right? Because they were so enslaved. So matzah is actually going to represent slave food that the Jewish people ate. But it's also, that's at the beginning of Pesach, or the beginning of the Haggadah, actually, I should say. And by the end, they go free. The same food is going to represent their freedom.
But slavery is represented by chametz. And that's the, not physical, but the spiritual slavery is by chametz. So yes, matzah is going to represent both. Absolutely true. It's a slave food. It's very unadorned. It's made quickly, eaten quickly. Yeah. I mean, to get through the system takes more time. But yes, hello.
Hi. Is Pesach the time of freedom? Then is it bound for Mashiach to come around Pesach?
Very, very nice. Very, very nice. So we hope for Mashiach to come every single day. I don't know if Mashiach has to come on Pesach himself. There is a reference to Pesach and Sukkot. There's a lot of reference to that as well. But the idea of the Geula, the redemption, following a Pesach pattern is spoken about. There is, we're going to see some relationship. Look, it's also more related to Purim, as we said. Right? We spoke about that Purim is still going to exist. It's going to supersede Pesach, though. Pesach will disappear to some degree. I don't know what that means, because I've only known Pesach, you know, but to some degree. But the idea of the redemption, we mentioned in Musaf and Shabbat, right, the second time of redemption, that's a reference to Mashiach coming. Yeah, so Mashiach come any time. I'm assuming somehow Pesach is going to be part of that. But it's interesting, I guess they ate matzah, and they never knew why matzah represented freedom. You are. So matzah represents... So they probably ate it and never knew. It happens to be the Jewish people left quickly without time for it to rise, so it represents freedom. But that was an afterthought. Can you see that? Because freedom came first. I did read somewhere a long time ago. I don't want to misinterpret it. But there are certain myths we don't have the reasons for. Some myths we don't have the reasons for. For example, Paraduma. So I did read once... I think. So you can take this with a grain of salt. But I think they once wrote that we don't know the reason for it because it hasn't happened yet, but there will be some event that will involve a red cow and it will be clear at that point why that certain animal has that purifying effect upon someone who is Matame Mes, who is spiritually impure because of a dead body. You with me? It's a wild idea. In other words, there will be something that will clarify to us. In other words, it gets the job done, we just don't know why or how it does it. It's a wild idea. Trust me, it's a wild idea. It's a wild idea. Okay, so let's talk about chametz a little bit and why it's considered to be such an evil and terrible thing. And let's talk about matzah, why it seemed to be the cure of all our spiritual maladies, especially on Pesach. Okay, so we'll start with chametz. Okay, so chametz is leaven, as we call it in English. What is leaven? What is chametz? It's not a trick question. You can answer it. What makes something chametz?
Things
that rise. Okay? So the water is attached to the dough, okay? Whether of the five grains, that be spelt, rye, barley, wheat, and oat. Okay? All those things, sure. Spelt, rye, barley, wheat, and oat. All those things are ground down. They can be found in the Torah. Look them up. Pesukim, Shemot, Yud Bet. All these things are grains that, when they are ground down, turn into a flour. When water is attached to them, they rise. That explains why rice is not chametz. Because when rice turns to flour and water attached to it, it does not rise. So why we don't eat rice is because of kidney oat. And there's different opinions as to why in the Ashkenazic world this was forbidden. One opinion is because when it ground down into a flour, rice flour looks very much like wheat flour. You can't tell the difference, so they stay away from it. Right? It's actually a legume is the real definition. Kidney oat are legumes, and therefore they don't eat them. Another one is because when they used to sell all grains in these big bags in markets, they were all next to each other, they would cross-contaminate, and therefore you end up with a bit of chametz inside the rice, and that was a big problem. Even Sephardim, who do eat rice, not all Sephardim do. Any Moroccans here? The Moroccans don't. The Persians, you right, Moroccan? Any Moroccans here? No Moroccans at all? Wow. So the Moroccans will, I don't believe, eat rice on Pesach. The Persians and the Iraqis and the Emirates, they do eat rice, but even they, if you've seen your mothers do it, will check the rice 3 times. What are you checking for? You're checking for even a little bit a mashu of chametz. But rice is, no one believes rice to be chametz, which is why actually you are permitted to eat in a house that has rice in it. You just can't eat the rice. You can eat in a house that has rice in it, and you can even eat from a pot that cooked rice on Pesach, right? But you can't eat the rice itself. Unless you marry a Sfardi man, Emes Hashem. And if you do that, then you take on your husband's customs, and you are allowed to eat rice on Pesach. As a side point, quinoa, which is now very, very popular, I used to have to sit for half an hour to describe what it was, is also not a grain. They refer to it as a herb. Yeah. And therefore, people will eat quinoa. They say, is it kidney or not kidney? That's a whole discussion, but many people need it. Rabbi Blumenkrantz in his book brings down that people have certain diets that are restricted, can't eat other stuff. They can eat quinoa. Quinoa is not chametz. That is for sure. It is questionable whether it's kidney yot, and people are lenient, and Sephardim definitely eat quinoa on Pesach. And the idea is that it is not a grain. That's a side point, but it's an important one. And what makes something into a grain is that when it mixes with water, it rises. So what we're staying away from is chametz. And chametz is the risen aspect of the dough. But as soon as flour hits water, it does start to rise. Which is why the chametz, the Pesach matzah process, is such a fast process. You have 18 minutes to, whoop, get it done. And the reason is you want to do it before it rises. So what does chametz represent that we are so scared of it? You may have noticed that your families, and most Jewish families, will remove all chametz from the home. Okay? And the reason why that is based upon a law which most people are not aware of, which is that chametz on Pesach is not batal b'shishim.
160,
that is correct. Chametz is not nullified 1 in 60 on Pesach. Before Pesach it is, but on Pesach it is not. Even a mashu of chametz, even a mashu, which means a small amount of chametz that falls inside chametz free food on Pesach, nullifies the entire food. Afilu be'elef, even 1 in 1,000. Whether that's literal or not, we'll get to. I'll explain. If non-kosher food falls inside kosher food during the year, if there are 60 parts that kosher food to 1 part that non-kosher food, that food is kosher and can be eaten.
Oh, okay.
On Pesach, that is not true. Even a small amount of chametz can render a food not kosher. It is not batal b'shishim, which is why we're so obsessed with removing every little speck of chametz from our homes.
Can you write
Sure.
It will be a pleasure to write. We're having Hebrew day today. Not a bad thing. So we have something called batel b'shishim, nullified in 60. Non-kosher food is nullified in 60. Chametz in Pesach food, on Pesach, it is not nullified. It does not work. Now, that's why many people will make food Erev Pesach, because Erev Pesach, chametz is allowed. So it is nullified 1 in 60. But on Pesach, it is not. So many people, especially, will prepare their foods beforehand, if able to. You don't have to, but that is a very good preventative measure, because, and it's also very handy because you've got a lot of cooking and cleaning, but the food is not nullified. So chametz is an issa that is very strict. Also, by eating chametz, a person gets karet, or kares. Kares is a very strict thing. That is the same thing that a person gets for eating food on Yom Kippur. And that means even a small amount. A person does not get kares, for eating non-kosher food. In non-kosher food, you're metamtem your lev, you're blocking your heart, as we discussed last semester. But that is not true of chametz. Chametz is much, much worse. So the rabbis are really pointing out, chametz is like the evil. It is the worst thing. Karet is reserved for the worst thing. Spiritually cut off, spiritual excision. Karet means the cut. Now, well, that means the whole different discussion. According to Rashi, the person goes, Ariri, childless, chas v'shalom, they lose a child. The good news is that it is teshuva a bull, by the way. You can do teshuva for karet, because it's between a person and a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So you can read the Balatanya, I believe, there's a whole thing according to Kabbalah that a person's soul neshama is cut and split from its shoresh, from its source, that's itself, from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay? So whatever it means, according to those different opinions, that's karet. And a person gets karet eating chametz on Pesach, even a mashu, even a small amount, which explains why we completely remove all chametz from our homes on Pesach. Hannah, question. Sorry, Hannah. Sorry. Yeah? You, go. Great question. So the question is, what changed between a regular day and Pesach? And the answer is, you've now entered the Zman. The time itself creates that reality. The time itself creates that reality. Okay. Charlie?
If you eat chametz on Pesach,
what
do you get?
A person gets karet, yeah.
But like,
I'll
come back to me because I have a
okay, no problem, that's good. There's a lot of information today, yeah.
So if you're preparing this food before for Pesach, does like your whole house have to be cleaned out?
So the answer is, it does have to be cleaned out. You have to clean, well, not the whole house, but you clean out that area, right? You clean out. But I'm saying, if in a worst case scenario, a little bit of chametz falls in, it is batel b'shishim because it only comes forbidden on Pesach itself. You get it? So it's batel b'shishim, but on Pesach itself, we're saying it takes on the issa, the isur, the finish, kicks in with the time. There's nothing wrong with chametz the day before or the day after. You can eat as many bagels as you want, which explains why all these Jews go rushing out Motzei Pesach to the pizza stores, right? Which I don't do, right? But everyone goes like, freaks out, oh, I'm going to get pizza, because it's fine, that's fine. But on the day, the time itself, chametz is... because we'll see what it's going to represent something, by the way. That's what we're getting to over here. That's going to be the punchline. But we're seeing even a small amount of it. Unlike non-kosher food, there's a shear. Most things have a shear. But with Pesach and chametz, even a mashahu. So the time itself creates that reality. Yes.
Okay,
good.
Isn't there something that you say when you remove a chametz from your house that you removed everything even if you don't have any knowledge of it?
Okay, we're going to see. We're going to nullify. We're going to get rid of chametz in a number. When we get there, we're going to get there.
So like, if you don't know that you ate...
okay, that's another thing. So if a person is culpable, right? Person does things by oneness, by accident, whatever it is, then they're not held culpable. Absolutely, I hear you. And we're going to make various... chametz is going to be so strong, we're going to remove it physically, we're going to make declarations, right? We're going to disown it, we're going to burn it, we're going to do whatever we can to get rid of it. Okay, but what I want to point out, and this is the key point to all this, is why would you have to do that? It obviously represents something really, really strong. So we're going to see the Gemara connects this chametz thing, which, remember, even a mashu is a problem, it's a small amount, to the Eitzara. So the chametz is a physical representation, the rabbis tell us, in the Gemara, and says that it represents the Yetzer Hara. So the question is, why would a leavened food represent the Yetzer Hara? What's up with that? So it represents three aspects of a person's neshama. And that is the desire to do evil. Sure. Yeah, you repeat the question? So we're saying, the Gemara tells over here, the Gemara and Brachas tells us, together with Rashi, that the yeast in the dough, the chametz, represents the Yetzer Hara. And we're on Pesach going to try to get rid of it. And Mitzrayim represented the Yetzer Hara as well. So when we say we're trying to get rid of the chametz, we're getting rid of a physical representation which is forbidden. But it's going to represent something else. And it's going to represent the Yetzer Hara, says the Gemara. So with the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, the desire to do wrong, which we all struggle with, which we are all slaves to. It's going to be the connection. We are all slaves to our Yetzer Hara. So the Gemara tells us that the chametz represents this Yetzer Hara. And by removing the chametz, by cleaning our houses, our homes of chametz, we are also
cleaning our neshamas of a yetzer hara, and that is part of the thought process that should go into it. Now, for many women, unfortunately, just the idea of cleaning out the houses itself becomes a yetzer hara. That is not such a good thing. And we'll talk, by the way, and I'll be hopefully demonstrating to you from Chazal's more recently how a person should pace it, and it is not a spring clean. There is no mitzvah to clean your curtains and clean the chandeliers. There is a mitzvah to remove the chametz from your houses before Pesach. But one is not expected to clean their entire house and do a curtain clean, you know. We refer to it as a spring clean. Although we'll see that Pesach does occur in the spring, right? It is not a spring clean. It's a chametz clean. And if you have rooms that were not used the entire year and no one took any food into, then you do not have to clean them out. Okay? If it was a spring clean, you would. Are we clear? So we're not spring cleaning and doing the curtains. I know some women who like to do the entire house, they freak out, start doing the curtains. There is no chametz, unless you have very young children that flick food around, on your chandelier. Okay? By the way, if there were kids, then you would have to check it. The Rabbeinu Nissim, the Run, a fantastic piece, says that Jewish women have been told this for thousands of years, yet they don't listen to it because they're so attuned to the power of Pesach that it becomes, I have to clean everything. It's the Run. Rabbeinu Nissim said that a long time ago. There's an ancient tradition of Jewish women through history, he doesn't actually say this, is my wording, to freak out before Pesach, right? And go, I'm clean everything. I mean, I know we're near Pesach because my wife starts to freak out on Purim. It's like, oh no, 30 days till Pesach. That's true, by the way. There's a reality to that. Dina, yeah. Right, so we're saying very, very good. We're saying it doesn't just do that. It is the mitzvah. Every mitzvah needs an action. Okay, we're going to learn that from Pesach, by the way, that we have to act it out and do in order to achieve it. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu always creates a physical action to represent a spiritual idea. But it won't just be random acts. It's not just like, okay, so we clean the house of chametz, which got nothing to do with. We're saying the two are connected. There's something about chametz that is going to represent the Yetzer Hara. And the main aspect of it, let's just get to the punchline because I want to do that today, is the idea of the ego. What prevents us from true spirituality, true spiritual freedom? And that is the ego. And the Yetzer Hara represents the ego. Right? Ga'ava. Ga'ava, the ego within the person, because it's the blown up part of yourself. It's the air that you fill yourself with. And that is the air in the dough. So the Yetzer Hara is the ego, which is considered the worst part. And that is represented by the chametz, which is full of air and full of time. The difference between matzah and chametz is time. Says Chazal, very famously on this, write this down. Mitzvah ba liado. If the chance for a mitzvah comes to your hand, al tachmitzena, don't let it become chametz. Mitzvah ba liado, al tachmitzena, don't let your mitzvah become chametz. The word mitzvah, or mitzvot, is the same as matzot. Mem sadi vav taf. Mitzvot, matzot. Chametz is slow. Take time. Which is why Avram Avinu was all about Zerizus. Remember, when the angels came, he's running. He represents speed and quickness and alacrity. That's from the Gemara. Mitzvah Bali Ado Al Tachmisena. I cannot recall where, but it's a famous Chazal. Very famous Chazal. A mitzvah comes to your hand. Don't let it become chametz. How does a mitzvah become chametz? When you don't do it, when you're able to do it. By delaying the process. That's the Yetzer Hara, and that is the chametz, which is the physical representation of not doing it straight away, which just happens to relate to Avraham Avinu, and it happens to be on Pesach as well, who was all about maher, kasiu got, rats, he's running, you know, he's running. He represents the idea of alacrity. When the Jewish people left Mitzrayim, they ran out. They weren't escaping. They were free already. They were free from the night before. But they were passionate to get to Har Sinai, to the next page of Jewish history. So they were passionate, so they moved quickly with the Issa, with the dough on their backs to get out, which eventually became matzah. Are we tying this together in our heads? I want you to, it's got to come full circle of it. So what was your question? So it's the very, very good. So it's part of the process is, it could be a number of things, right? Part of the mitzvah is if you remove it, Hashem allows Yetzirah to be lessened in your life. There's some disconnect between the time and chametz, so that Hashem gives us a gift. It's a gift. You just get to that stage and you pick up freedom. In order to do that, the chametz has got to be gone. That's blocks. In other words, you're removing a blockage that naturally is flowing to you on Pesach, on the time. Okay, so you're right. It's a very, very good. It's a mental state too, and you have to go through these ideas and learn these ideas, and you pray for them. But it's actually a gift. Hashem will lessen the Yetzirah at this time. It's a free gift. That comes. In other words, it's part of the time. It's part of the time. You have to do your mitzvah. You got to do your actions. You do the physical actions, and Hashem takes care of our neshamas. And that's really what I mean. That's going to be the ultimate answer to some degree. Yeah, Nicole. So we said it represents the desire for ra, for evil. It represents the ego aspect, the gaiva, right? And matzah is going to represent anivus, anivut, humility. It's a flat, right? It's low, right? And it's also going to represent idolatry. We'll come to why that is a little bit later, right? And the idea of idolatry, avodah zarah, which is also something the Jewish people were escaping from when they left Mitzrayim. So it's going to represent that as well. Okay? Those are the three things Chazal seem to talk about that the Chametz represents. Okay? So have a look inside the Gemara we just brought down, Brachas. And it's Rabbi Alexander used to pray, and he would say, Ribbono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, it is Galu V'Yadu, it's revealed before you, that is your will, for us to do your will. What prevents us? And he says, it's the yeast in the dough. It's the Sa'or Shebe'isa. The Sa'or, the yeast Shebe'isa, that is inside the dough. Well, what does that mean? It's like the yeast in the dough is not making me do mitzvahs? What's that got to do with it? So we're saying what it represents. And it says, right? So Rashi over there says, because this yeast in the dough represents the Yetzara, i.e. the drive to do evil, which we are all slaves to, okay? Which Pesach is going to free us from, yeah? Or able to free us from. Mama? Which part? The whole thing. Very, very good. So the Gemara says that Rabbi Alexander used to pray and say, Hashem, help us to remove. So what prevents us from doing what we're meant to do, for being good people, and it is the Sa'or, it is the leaven in the Issa, in the dough. That's written inside. Right? Sin Aleph Vav Resh Shebe Isa Ayin Yud Samach Hey. So what does that mean? So he's saying, so Rashi helps and says, I tell you, that represents the Yetzara inside all of us. And that is what's preventing us. So Chametz represents. So what we're trying to do on Pesach is to completely remove this Yetzara. And hopefully have it last all year. Because that's how you go free. So you're not just going free from Egypt, you're going free from Yetzara. That's the Zman, and that's the Chirus. Now, just download this into your heads for a moment, and I'm going to come back to this when we get to Shavuot, which, remember, is the other bookend. Does anyone know where the word Chirut, or I should say the letters Chirut, Chet, Resh, Vav, Tav, appear on Shavuot, or Har Sinai? Tough question. So we're going to see when we get there. We'll talk about it. I just want to download it into your heads right now, so we look at it a little bit later. It'll sound familiar to you. That the Luchos, Moshe Rabbeinu was told to charut, to chisel, carve in the letters into the Luchot, into the tablets. So that same word is going to appear later on. And the two are going to be connected. The charut of Pesach is going to be related to the carving in of the Torah into the tablets, and ultimately into our hearts is going to be the... So that's why that's going to come full circle of those 49 days from Pesach Shavuot as the Cherut becomes Charut. But just to show you, the word itself repeats itself a little bit later and represents something else. Okay? Turn over the page. Let's look at note 3. Let's go full circle. Let's see if we can just finish this today, which I'd love to do, which is possible, in the remaining 7 minutes. Says the Sefer Chinuch, Mitzvah 117, note 3. Therefore, Al Kain, Bar Chikma Chametz, when a person gets rid of their Chametz, Shunaseh B'Shia Gedula, okay, which symbolizes our desire to work with enthusiasm and speed in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, how do we, what is the representation? I want to do good. My enthusiasm, my, as we say, my zrizus, is the key character trait of Pesach. As my kids always say when they learn the letter Zion, zrizus, zrizus, run, run, run. You're not always running. You can be, but it's more of an attitude. When you're a child, you got to run to the mitzvahs, right? You don't have to be running around. It's an attitude of passion, of alacrity, which is why the Sefer Chinuch quotes the famous Mishnah from Pirkei Avot, that a person should be, have a kal kenesher, light as an eagle, ratz kitzvi, and you should run like a deer, right? Have a gibor ka'ari, and strong as a lion, la sobra son of ish b'shamayim. Right? So these are character traits which we want to emulate and have the ability to achieve on. So the Peleioitz, a later writer, Rav Papo, talks about this as well, and says that really the mitzvah of removing chametz is to remove the impurity from our hearts. That's really what we're doing. That's really what's meant to go through our minds when we're cleaning out the chametz and avoiding it on Pesach. So part of the Pesach preparation is a little bit of internal cleaning out of our spiritual houses, specifically the midah of ego, which we're going to see is related to many other midot, including anger, kas, is related to ego. You know, that's the famous connection. Okay.
But what if you don't have a big ego?
Everyone's got a big ego.
Not
we're all working on it. Everyone's working on it at their level. I'm not about you. You're a tzaddikus. But the rest of us, humans, are dealing with ego-related problems. Ego gava is a constant struggle for all of us and mankind, and prevents us from achieving greatness. And really, the ergo, we're going to see that humility, which is the opposite, right, which the Rambam speaks about, is going to be the tool that we need in order to receive Torah, which by Moshe Rabbeinu is described one way only, as the humblest person, anav ish ma'od, extremely humble, kol adam pnei adama, more than anyone else on the earth. Right? Because that's going to be the conduit for Kabbalah Torah. So in order to get Torah, you need to have humility. So one leads to the other. By removing ego, then we open ourselves up to Torah, which is why Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen to receive the Torah, because he was the one who was the humblest person that ever lived. And the Torah says, the Torah means it. He was the humblest. So that is the positive trait that we're going for on Pesach in order to achieve Kabbalah Torah on Shavuos. Yeah. So I think we have to... Okay, fine. You're saying it doesn't seem like what we do on Pesach represents it. So actually, it really does. Because we didn't free ourselves. We were taken out as a gift by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The whole thing is a recognition that we didn't create ourselves, that we were slaves, humble beginnings, that Hashem took us out, otherwise we'd still be there. The whole theme of the entire Haggadah, all of Pesach, is actually a very humbling experience. I will still be a slave. Hashem took us out. We are nothing without HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That realization is really the focus, right? We didn't fight our way out, you know, right? We did on Purim, right? Fighting was a feature of there. We just walked out. Hashem took us out. So that's what the Chinuch says. So the yeast represents, Sa'or represents the inflated person, the arrogant individual. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates nothing more than arrogance, than ga'ava, kol ga'ava lev, as it says in Mishlei. Okay? And how do we fit idolatry into that? So Avodah Zarah, say Chazal, represents the idea of taking nothing and making it into something big. Can you see that? You took nothing, you took Eitz, you took Evan, you took Zav, you took Kesef, something of physical meaninglessness, and made it something big. You inflated it to something very important in your life. It's also just an attitude, it wasn't just a thing. These people weren't crazy. Right? They knew what they were doing. So it's related to the idea of I'm also expanding this thing itself. Okay. Let's have a look at a nice, beautiful piece by one of my favorite commentators, which everyone seems to love in our generation, Rav Hirsch, Note 7. Let's just read this piece out loud. I love Rav Hirsch, my favorite commentary on the Torah, right? Because, you know, it's very inspirational. He's very much, you know, which our generation connects to for a number of reasons, you know. She does? Oh, I could sit. See, it's very rare nowadays I can read something in English and be inspired by it. I mean, I'm like, uh-huh, you know? But when you read Hirsch, you're like, whoa. You know what I'm saying? So he says, freedom, he's going to summarize everything, in his, by which we mean deliverance from burdens and breaking of chains, is only a negative good. You see that? By getting out, that's a negative good. This freedom is merely a state in which the impediment standing in the way of fulfillment of the human vocation has been removed. That's freedom, right? Freedom is removing that which is blocking you. It is merely a state in which room has been made for the divine likeness to shine forth in man. If this vocation is to be fulfilled, he says, if this likeness to be realized, then the person who has become liberated and has been freed from his burdens must acknowledge him, God, capital H, to whom he owed this liberation from his burdens and freedom. The free, unburdened person must accept his freedom from burdens and his liberty as a gift from God. Right? So it sounds like American constitutional, no? That's where they got it from. All right? It's based upon this idea. And be very serious. Right? When they created this state you're in today, it was based upon these ideas of calling out, draw freedom. He must recognize in God the source of his freedom and must feel himself eternally bound to God and in service to him precisely because of his freedom. Simply put, by being made free by someone else, our gratitude goes to, actually our service goes to, in other words, we actually were never free. We went from one master, from Paro to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the reality of the situation, if you want to be perfectly honest about it. Which takes us to the final part of this theme. That's note 8. And it says in Pirkei Avos, based upon the Pasuk, that freedom, charut, is related to charut, is related to charut, which is to engage. So how do we find freedom? How do we enact it? By learning Torah. By engraving the Torah on ourselves. So people who think they're free from mitzvah are actually slaves to the Yetzer Hara. Because the Torah itself is the source of freedom. That is what brings, so charut brings chirut. That's what Rav Dessler says. Rav Friedlander puts it down so beautifully in Sifsei Chaim. So by learning Torah, by attaching to the charut, i.e. Torah, we engrave in our hearts the idea of freedom, and that's what really brings freedom to us as a people. So we don't just go free, we enact our freedom, and we learn Torah, which represents freedom as well. Okay? And that's why we say the free is the person who is free from the Yetzer Hara, i.e. we're all slaves, slaves of Yetzer Hara. How do we go free? We relive the Pesach experience, and then we learn Torah, which itself is a freeing experience, as it frees us from the Yetzer Hara that is constantly ruling us. We'll do more on that when we get to Shavuot. See you all on Wednesday. Good job, we did a lot today.